Welcome back to season two of Snubs and Dubs, where we've been talking about the snubs and dubs of the 87th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how you doing?
Doing pretty good, Kyle. Yeah. Doing pretty good.
Living the dream in a new location?
One could say that. it's a pretty cute little place. We've got all of our stuff in. My girlfriend and I moved recently, in case you listen to this and don't understand the context. And we have room for everything except for one Lazy Boy chair that's kind of just bumming around from room to room until we find a good spot for it. Because I had a dream of it going in the living room around the TV, but we own too much couch for that to be a reality. So we don't know what to do with it right now. And it might just live in our bedroom where there's enough space to keep it. We have a weird reading chair, despite the complete lack of reading that occurs in that house. But how are you doing, Kyle?
Yeah, I'm good. I haven't did anything exciting. I didn't even watch anything extra in the last week. I was like, I don't know if I was that busy, but there's other like, there's so much TV happening right now.
Oh, yeah.
Miss Marvel had its first episode. Obi-Wan's still going. I'm kind of like losing interest in that.
I've heard that one's not the most like high stakes thing.
Yeah.
Especially anytime you're doing like a long after the original material prequel, you know who lives. You've seen them do other stuff.
Yeah.
And when they introduce characters, you can normally pick off who the expendable ones are.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, I don't know what it is. It just says like it hasn't gripped me.
Yeah.
I like some of the other Star Wars stuff, like Mandalorian is great. And maybe it's because it's an original character that's like new and I don't have like previous attachments to that. It's like more exciting. But yeah, with Obi-Wan, maybe with Obi-Wan, I wanted more. I had higher expectations and they're not living up to it. But yeah.
Well, that got so much buzz. Everyone wanted a Kenobi series.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to really deliver on that when it's been so hyped for so long.
Yeah. And there's like, because that space between like episode 3 and 4, it seems like such an interesting time, or it could be such an interesting time for Kenobi. But then, yeah, I don't know. The answers are maybe not as interesting as the questions or the ideas people had.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah. Did I mention The Boys last week?
No, I don't think you did.
Season 3 started, yeah.
How is season 3 of The Boys?
Fucking right back into it, on point. They had released the first 3 episodes, which I enjoyed. Got through all of them basically in one sitting. And the 4th one just came out today, and I watched that as well. And yeah, they've just been like, they continue to hit. Like, it's just such an entertaining show.
I only kind of vaguely know about it. It's like real gritty superheroes, but are they heroes?
Yeah.
Kind of violent kind of thing? Is that the gist of it?
It basically is like a superhero world, but they use it to like comment on pretty much everything.
Ah.
Like corporations owning everything, corrupt governments, social justice issues. Yeah. Scientology, they had a whole arc about that.
Oh, that's brave.
And yeah, it's just endlessly entertaining. The characters are so fun and they don't care anymore. Like, I think they never really cared that much about like what people thought about the show because like it's that type of material.
Yeah.
But like in the first episode, like in the first like scene of the first episode, like if you were not on board before, like you're not going to be on board again, because there's a lot of blood and guts and gore and it's great. Yeah, it's a good show.
I imagine by the time they got to season 3, they're just thinking that they're playing with house money now. They never expected to get this far. So who cares if you get a season 4 out of it? Let's just with it.
They also just announced season 4, like this morning too, after the first 3 episodes, probably did really well. So Amazon's pushing it ahead.
Good job, The Boys. You keep that commentary up, lads.
But yeah, did you watch anything else?
No. I watched the movie of me unpacking lots of boxes. I did watch me and my friends try and get a couch down.
Oh, nice.
Because it's into this, it's a basement unit. There's like a little foyer down the staircase. Hard 90 degree turn left into the kitchen. Oh, that couch. Oh, that was it. We took the legs off.
Oh, wow.
Hardly helped.
Dang.
We took it down this foyer.
Yeah.
And we tried. We could not get it through the doorway. We pull it back. I'm ready to throw it out or leave it on the front lawn or whatever. And my buddy says, what if we try rotating it?
Oh.
And then we did. And holy
shit. This could have been a movie. This is why I'm dropping this in this segment. Because we bat every inch of couch that got through the door required a rotation, pull out, 360 spinorama back out the other way. And there was never a bigger celebration than when that thing got downstairs. It lives in that house. If we have to remove it, I'm sawing it in half and throwing it out after. Wow.
There seems like there was more drama in that couch than some of the movies that we'd watched previously. Maybe even in this one.
Possibly even this one. I was kind of fondly looking back at the drama and plot points of that couch getting through a door.
All right. Well, of course, season two of Snubs and Dubs has been covering the films from the year 2014. And for episode 19, we're talking about another Best Picture nominee, The Theory of Everything. Had you seen it before?
No. And I thought I did. For some reason, I had convinced myself that I had seen it before. And then seconds in, I'm like, oh, I don't know this movie at all. Yeah, have you?
I had. I think I watched it near the awards season because I was kind of like trying to watch everything. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I made many comments to you throughout the season. Because I'm like, I was hyping this season up. I was like, this season's banger after banger. There's so many good movies in this season. But we also have to watch The Theory of Everything. I never thought to watch it again until obviously we talked about it in this season. I don't remember why I didn't like it so much. I think just because, and you know, preview for what my thoughts are, but it's kind of just boring.
Yeah, you really built this up as a very boring movie. So my bar was on the floor when I watched it, and it exactly met those expectations. Not under, not over, right in line.
Yeah, but I had, yeah, like I said, I watched it in 2014. I haven't seen it since then. So it's been, or 2014, 2015, one of those areas.
It was
around
like late
time.
2014. Yeah. So you can round that out to 7 years ago.
Yeah, it's been quite a few years, but no.
Yeah. Just no.
All right. Well, if you're interested in The Theory of Everything or the book it's based on, I've included links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out the show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation. So if you haven't seen the movie yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's content. But without further ado, let's get into it.
The Theory of Everything is a biographical romance. I wrote novel. Is a biographical romance drama directed by James Marsh and written by Anthony McCartan. It is adapted from Jane Hawking's 2007 memoir, Traveling to Infinity, My Life with Stephen Hawking. And you know, infinity has no end, but they got divorced. So I don't know about that title. That might have been a working one. Might need a revisit.
Oh, no.
This is starring Eddie Redmayne as Stephen Hawking, Felicity Jones, great name, as Jane, Emily Watson as Jane's mother, David Thewlis as Dennis Sciamma.
I struggle with that in my plot reading, too.
Yep. Ooh, Charlie Cox as Jonathan Hellyer Jones, and Simon McBurney as Stephen's father. I guess that's Simon. I was not. I was kind of typing this out while watching, and some letters and words may not have properly transposed. I'm not correcting any of that, though. The runtime is 123 minutes and was released on November the 7th of 2014. Kyle, we've talked a bit about how it's a little on the dry side, but what did you think about this film, The Theory of Everything?
Yeah, it's boring.
It's boring.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, and I worried before you came to start this episode that I was not going to remember it. And I watched it on Tuesday and we're recording it on a Friday.
Yeah.
It's just like one of those movies that like you watch it and you visually take it in and maybe a little bit. But afterwards, it's hard to remember anything about it except for Eddie Redmayne's face.
Yes. So much of this movie is just not important to the movie.
Yeah.
They do. It's really about the drama and the relationship. It's a love story. And like, that's not why Stephen Hawking's a significant figure.
Yeah.
I mean, there is kind of some drama. There is a little factor to him divorcing his wife to go away with his caretaker.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of saucy. But in the movie, it's boring. Like, it's not even, it's just like, I'm going with Mason now. She can speak to me in ways that you can't, which is through that box.
Yeah. But it was also like, I mean, obviously, Jane loved Steven, even through this whole difficult time. And they obviously divorced on relatively good terms, but it was also probably the case that Jane knew she had Jonathan just like in the pocket.
In her pocket.
Yeah, exactly.
And I did a little, we'll get into it. I did a little bit of a dive into the reality of the story.
Yeah.
So we'll touch on that later.
Okay.
Because spoilers, there's fucking nothing for good Letterboxd reviews. So I had to fill that with something. One thing that kind of bummed me about this movie is that they never talk about his theory of everything. That's the titular theory, and they don't care. They only really bring it in respect to like, does God exist or not, which is kind of like a boring way to interact with like groundbreaking physics work.
And I also found that like the first third of this movie was where I was like still kind of interested, but once he kind of is being cared for ultimately, like that's when I started looking at my phone a little bit more.
Yeah.
I found that the latter two thirds just like bone dry. Really hard to get through. Like not even Charlie Cox and his charming ass face helped me struggle through this.
Yeah. They needed to pick a side. In my opinion, they needed to pick a side with this thing and have some kind of bad guy or villain. But therein lies the rub, because it took a long time for Jane Hawking's memoir to be allowed to be adapted. Oh. So I think they had to walk a very fine line in order to make this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that fine line erased a lot of what might have made this story interesting from it. That's my hot take. I don't know exactly how accurate that is. I got a little bit of fun facts about like the making of this that kind of relates to that for later. But like they don't really talk about his theory, which is kind of annoying because you can have a little faith in your audience to understand some physics. And I don't care about the romance story the longer that the movie goes, because like they kind of just slowly fall out of love in like a pretty fizzly out way. Like there's no big performance. There's no like huge explosion of tempers or anything. Yeah. They just kind of drift apart and then have other partners.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why it's so boring, I find, once he's being cared for.
Yeah.
Because, that romance and that tension, like you'd think, and you see like, you know, Felicity Jones is doing her best to kind of express that she is struggling.
Mm-hmm.
But then when she is struggling and she tells Steven that she needs help, Steven's like, oh, we'll get help. And then she's like, okay, so they got help. And then they're hanging out and having help. And then they have another baby. And there's like one bit of conflict where the mother's like, oh, is that actually his baby? Or is it actually Charlie Cox's handsome baby?
Mm-hmm.
And then like, that's like a little conflict. And then the breakup, it's not even like an argument.
It's the just last like, 7 minutes.
I tried. And they're like, yep.
Yeah. It's like, I am leaving. And then she's like, I tried. And he's like, yeah, you did, didn't you? You gave it your best, didn't you, bud?
Yeah.
It's just, there's no meat anywhere in here.
Yeah, no. Well, let's get into the plot. University of Cambridge astrophysics student Stephen Hawking begins a relationship with literature student Jane Wilde. Although Stephen is intelligent, his friends and professors are concerned about his lack of a thesis topic. After he and his professor, Dr. Seema, attend a lecture on black holes, Stephen speculates that black holes may have been part of the creation of the universe and decides to write his thesis on them. However, Steven's muscles begin to fail, giving him decreasing coordination with his body. He learns that he has motor neuron disease, which will eventually leave him unable to move, swallow, and even breathe. There are no treatments, and he has approximately 2 years to live. The doctor assures Steven that his brain will not be affected, so his thoughts and intelligence will remain intact, but eventually he will be unable to communicate. As Steven becomes reclusive, focusing on his work, Jane confesses that she loves him. She tells his father she intends to stay with Steven even as his condition worsens. They marry and have their first son, Robert. Steven presents his thesis to the examination board, arguing that a black hole created the universe in a big bang, that it will emit heat and end in a big crunch. He begins using a wheelchair after his walking ability deteriorates. After the Hawkings have their daughter Lucy, Stephen develops a theory about the visibility of black holes and becomes a world-renowned physicist. Jane, focusing on the children as well as Stephen's health and increasing fame, is unable to work on her own thesis and becomes frustrated. Stephen tells her that he will understand if she needs help. She joins a church choir where she meets widower Jonathan and they become close friends. She employs him as a piano teacher for Robert, and Jonathan befriends the entire family, helping Stephen with his illness, supporting Jane, and playing with the children. When Jane gives birth to another son, Timothy, Stephen's mother asks Jane if the baby is Jonathan's, which she denies. Jonathan is appalled, but when he and Jane are alone, they admit their feelings for one another. He distances himself from the family, but Stephen tells him Jane needs him. While attending an opera performance in Bordeaux, Stephen is taken ill and rushed to a hospital. The doctor informs Jane that he has pneumonia and that he needs a tracheotomy to survive, but it will leave him mute. She agrees to the surgery. Stephen learns to use a spelling board and uses it to communicate with Elaine, his new nurse. He receives a computer with a built-in voice synthesizer and uses it to write a book, A Brief History of Time, in 1988, which becomes an international bestseller. Stephen tells Jane that he has been invited to the United States to accept an award and he will be taking Elaine with him. Jane faces the realization that the marriage has not been working, telling him that she did her best, and they agree to a divorce. Stephen goes to the lecture with Elaine, the two have fallen in love, and Jane and Jonathan reunite. At the lecture, Stephen sees a student drop a pen. He imagines getting up to return it, almost crying at the reminder of how his disease has affected him. He goes on to give a speech telling the audiences to pursue their ambitions despite the harsh reality of life. Where there's life, there is hope, he says. Stephen invites Jane to meet Queen Elizabeth II with him when being made a member of the Order of the Companions of Honor. They share a happy day together with their grandchildren. An extended closing series comprises select moments from the film, shown in reverse, back to the moment where Stephen first saw Jane. The reversal is reminiscent of Stephen's research methodology of reversing time to understand the beginning of the universe. Later, Jane and Jonathan marry, and she completes her doctorate of philosophy. She and Stephen remain close friends. Stephen declines a knighthood from the Queen and continues his research with no plans to retire in the near future. And this isn't in the film, but Stephen Hawking would die 4 years after this film's release in March of 2018. He was 76 years old.
Wow. Fantastic plot work, wow. Kyle. As always, the golden standard of recapping plots from Wikipedia right there. Now, one of the big pulls of this movie, the performances.
Yes.
What are your opinions on the performances?
Okay. Obviously, I respect what Eddie Redmayne is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Very physical performance.
Very physical.
Despite also being like
physically
immobile.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So like he's doing a lot, but like also in not doing much. Which is also where when I mentioned earlier that the first third of this movie seemed more entertaining, because that decline was more interesting to me than when he was like fully in the chair. Like I think he was giving more interesting performance and he was able to be more physical and you could see how like upsetting his deterioration was.
Mm-hmm.
And like he was doing a lot of great physical work there, but then obviously afterwards like he is just kind of in immobile.
Yeah. It's weird that this movie falls into such a well-versed category of movies, which is like biopic about a person made for Oscar bait and the person who is the subject of the movie has some kind of disability.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of these. And I think Eddie Redmayne's performance is good.
Mm-hmm.
The way he can like capture Stephen Hawking in this is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
It's just kind of not a useful performance because it like he's able to so well capture Stephen Hawking's mannerisms and how he acts.
Mm-hmm.
But like it doesn't do anything for the plot of the movie. It's just like a really, really good visual piece with nothing that it supports it.
Yeah, it's upsetting that the movie itself doesn't have enough substance to really elevate that performance into being really good. Like I do know that he won the Academy Award for this. We'll get to that a little bit later. And obviously this movie is elevated because of him.
Yeah.
But if the movie itself was more entertaining, more interesting, that complete package would have been a lot better. And I think a lot of more people would remember this performance because of that. Because like even like in his face, like he's able to move like certain muscles in his face.
Yeah.
After the motor neuron disease has really taken its toll, that like probably took a lot of practice and training and watching the real Stephen Hawking and learning what those mannerisms are. So like I gotta put some respect on this performance. Yeah. But yeah.
And one thing I want to say, because going through Letterboxd, there's a lot of people that were complaining about how this movie portrays like a fully abled actor portraying a disabled person. But this has the blessing of both Hawkings and Stephen Hawking was very fond of how he was portrayed in this movie. So that's not actually a roadblock in this. And he kind of gives a bang out performance.
Yeah.
Did you try making any of the facial expressions when you were watching? Because I was watching and I was thinking, how the fuck do you do that? And I tried to do the pursed lip look.
Right.
I can't. I don't know how he did this. Yeah. It's incredible.
No, I didn't try because it just looked uncomfortable.
Yeah, it looked painful. So I had to give it a go.
Yeah. And why would people complain about that? Do they know that the movie starts with him being able-bodied?
Yes.
Because do they want the actor to switch through?
See, what's interesting is like I think there is a valid point about portraying particular people who weren't able to give their permission. And if you're kind of capitalizing on the fact that, you know, someone is famous for a disability and now you're making a movie about that, reaping all the economic benefits and they're not, I can get that argument. I'm behind that.
Yeah.
But this had the full blessing and written, you need the legal permission to do this that they had.
Yeah.
And both Hawkings signed off on it. So it's not... In this particular case, I don't think it's really an issue. They had the proper approval from everyone. Mm. Felicity Jones, though, because she's also quite memorable for this performance. What do you think of her?
She's good.
She is good.
I will say, I think makeup didn't do a great job showing their age.
No.
Because Felicity Jones is obviously beautiful, and I just don't think they did enough to age her up.
No.
Because at the end, it's supposed to be their grandkids that they're looking at.
Yeah.
They do not look old enough to have grandchildren at that point.
Yeah. I think the issue is the way they tried to make her look older is they just kind of slowly dimmed down the shade of her lipstick.
Yeah.
That was the only thing I know. Oh, they cut her hair too.
Yeah.
But like not even that much. It goes from like shoulder length to just like around the chin.
Mm.
And yeah, like they don't make her look, I mean, granted, it's hard to make someone that beautiful look super old without really going to town or doing like the Winter Soldier wrinkle filter that just looked fucking wrong. But they don't really give enough effort. They just kind of change her makeup to be like a more natural look and then like take out some of like the color from it. And then that's her aging like 50 years. Sus.
Yeah. But beyond the makeup, like she does give a pretty good performance as well. And obviously this movie is on the back of her and Eddie Redmayne. I think she just doesn't get enough to do in that last two thirds.
No.
Again, she just kind of like they have their, you know, their meet cute and their romance blooming. And then she's determined to stick with him even through this disease. But then afterwards, she's just kind of like, she's angry, but obviously she loves him. And so that just kind of holds. And I think there needed to be maybe a little bit more nuance. And this is probably on the writing of her feelings during that moment, because he was only expected to live 2 years.
Yeah.
And he lived way beyond that. And so did she maybe expect him to live 2 years and only have to care for him for 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
And now she's at that point where she's still caring for this guy that she did not think that she would have to deal with.
Yeah. And like a lot of that kind of gets lost because she doesn't have that big of a role.
Yeah.
And even though she's clearly struggling, they don't really dive into that and kind of give her a big moment or some kind of arc with that.
Yeah.
Her only real character arc is that she slowly falls out of love and then gets the hots for the person who was helping them.
I mean, and it's Charlie Cox. Who wouldn't? Come on.
Everyone watching the movie slowly got the hots for Charlie Cox while watching it. That's not a difficult arc.
Yeah. And yeah, like the only real challenges that they showed her go under is like stop him from choking. At least that's what I recall. Like, she was frustrated trying to do some work when Stephen was wheeling around with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But like in terms of like dealing with Stephen's disability, that was kind of the only thing we saw.
Yeah. She just doesn't get a big payoff.
No,
anything.
She doesn't. Yeah.
There's also that one weird scene when she first finds out about his diagnoses and she goes to him and tells him to play croquet with her or she's never coming back.
Yeah.
And then he very angrily and very in pain plays a solo round of croquet. That was the weirdest thing because she came off as a dick.
Yeah.
he also kind of came off as a dick. Like, they both were just kind of dicks, yeah. And there was no reason for that.
No.
Because where does this character who says, you have to go do this thing with me or I leave, turn into someone who stays with him for like, how, 40, I don't remember how long they're married for, like 30-ish years before they divorce. Like, what was that scene?
I don't know. One thing I will give this movie credit for is it did make me laugh more than like The Imitation Game or American Sniper. It did have some like fun moments, but I think that was just demonstrating Stephen Hawking's actual sense of humor.
Yeah, because he apparently does have a super good, dry sense of humor. Yeah. And he can make a room with people laugh.
Yeah. There was one point that where one of his friends put him in the lap of a statue. Funny. That was pretty funny. But yeah, I don't know. Like, did anything else like stand out in this movie to you?
I mean, I like the backing, the track. Like, it has a pretty good score. Mm. The cinematography was good, but it just kind of felt like almost an expected level of, if you're taking this movie to be a Best Picture nominee, it's gonna look like that. Yeah. I did think like this had more interesting visuals than like Imitation Game. Mm. So I was more into watching it, but I don't know. It's just, it still hit an expected level from what I knew it was probably gonna be when I got into it. So it didn't blow me away.
No, yeah, that's the exact same way I feel about it. I also do really like the score, but in terms of like the visual elements, it did kind of feel like exactly what you expected and not beyond that.
Yeah, so. Exactly. There was nothing that really blew me away, but every shot did look good and everything was where it was supposed to be. There was no like jarring decisions.
Yeah.
They had some good switch ups, like when they had that montage of Jonathan. Why don't you forgetting her name? Jane and Steven on like the beach. Like, they had like that montage and they go through like a little gondola ride. Like, that was kind of cute. And they, that was a fun choice. But otherwise, like, it's just a pretty safe film with a less than stellar narrative.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to get into some rankings?
Yeah. Let's hear what other people thought about it.
All right. So we didn't quite love it, but let's see what the critics and audiences around the world had to say. Kyle, if you had to wager a guess, what would you say?
Well, it is a Best Picture nominee.
Correct.
So you got to think that there's some critical juice behind it.
You'd think so, but also American Sniper was also that's Best true. Picture nominee.
That's
so
true. I'm gonna go like 85% critics and then like low 70s audience, like 72.
You know, you're kind of close. You're in the ballpark. Yep. Critics 80.
Okay.
All audiences 84.
Oh,
as for Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. Hmm. So I mean, I guess so. IMDb has it a 7.7. And Metacritic, a 71. That kind of checked out in my books.
Yeah,
that's what I expected. What was actually a little bit surprising was this had a box office of $123 million on a budget of $15 million.
Wow.
This pulled a lot more bank and was made on a smaller budget than I expected it to be.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's not a lot that they do with the budget, really.
That's
it's
true.
Just kind of like minor locations and a few actors.
Yeah.
So I mean, I bet fair. A large part of that budget was for like Eddie Redmayne, Felicity Jones, David Willis, and Charlie Cox.
Yeah, but I imagine that's true. Because I guess they're not in that many locations otherwise.
Yeah, because they're kind of just in the home and then the university. They use a lot. They use it for university a lot.
A lot.
So
yeah. This was number 62 at the box office for the year. So not bad.
Yeah.
Honestly, more. It did better than I expected money-wise.
Mm-hmm. That might have been part of the reason why it actually got to Best Picture, because it was maybe more widely seen.
Wouldn't surprise me. That would kind of track for that.
Yeah, which is, I think, what the argument you can make for American Sniper was, it was a huge hit.
It was,
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of attraction to a movie about Stephen Hawking because he's such a beloved figure in our history.
Exactly. Well, let's get to our score time.
All right.
Kyle, what are you going to hit this for enjoyment?
I give it a 2.
2? That is quite fair. I'm going to slap this a 2.5. It was competently made enough that it held me more.
Yeah.
If it was in anywhere lacking, this dives pretty quick.
Yeah.
For craft, what are you giving this?
I give it a 3. Mm-hmm. Pretty safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the score is really nice, like we mentioned, but otherwise visually it's pretty safe. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna give this a 4. I think it was quite well done, and if it had a better narrative, I don't think I'd be as harsh on it. And that's not quite craft. So
yeah.
Yeah. Execution.
I gave this a 3. Mm-hmm. Writing doesn't do it any favors, but the performances do. I think Eddie Redmayne definitely does a great job. Felicity Jones as well does pretty good with what she's given. But yeah, the writing is definitely bringing it down from being any higher. So 3.
Yeah, I'm going to slide this a 3.5. And I think 2.5 of that is just Eddie Redmayne because he kind of kills it. Like he puts himself through a ringer.
Mm-hmm.
Rewatchability.
Now, do be in mind that this is the second time I've watched this.
Somehow you've watched it twice.
It's a 1 for me.
Yep. I'm going to slap this, I think, a 1.5.
Yeah.
Not quite the bottom of the barrel, but I'll be damned if it's not close. Oh, boy. All right, Kyle, final score time. You have given this a 9 out of 20 for a 45%. And I'm a little more charitable. I've given this an 11.5 out of 20 for a 58%. So it passes the Jason test. Fails in a flaming pile of disaster on the Kyle test.
Yeah.
Ranking time. Let me read off yours.
Okay.
Grand Budapest, Paddington, Captain America, Guardians of the Galaxy, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Interstellar, Gone Girl, Nightcrawler, Lego, Selma, John Wick, What We Do in the Shadows, Boyhood, Snowpiercer, Babadook, Imitation Game, Big Hero 6, Foxcatcher, American Sniper. Where's it going?
I had a big think about this.
Yes.
Because I was trying to determine whether it was number 20 under American Sniper or number 19 over American Sniper.
Yep.
And I think, and I had to review my own scores for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is number 20.
Ooh, below American Sniper. This is your new bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, this movie does talk about getting sucked into a black hole. It's kind of what happened in the rankings. All right. My ranking stopped to bottom. Grand Budapest, Paddington, Dawn, Interstellar, Gone Girl, Nightcrawler, John Wick, Selma, Guardians, What We Do in the Shadows, Lego, Babadook, Captain America, Snowpiercer, Boyhood, Big Hero 6, Imitation Game, Foxcatcher, American Sniper. I'm going to go a little bit higher. I think this was better than Imitation Game.
Interesting.
I think, I don't know, but I think that it was. Because for some reason, I was never mad at this movie.
That's fair.
I was bored. I was at times mad at Imitation Game. So I have to slide this one in higher.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. It's weird that we have 2 biopics about very famous math and science people in
and
this
they're
year.
Both British.
Yeah.
What are they doing over there? What are they up to? They're scheming away at something. And they're also both very low in the rankings.
Yeah.
We did not like those. All right. Well, fun Letterboxd review time. Kyle, I have 1.
Okay.
Now, this has a 3.6 out of 5, which is kind of funny since the top comments absolutely hated this movie. Goddamn, ripped it to shreds.
Right.
But all the reviews were garbage. And even though it has a decent rating, all the top reviews were just dunking the shit out of it. This review below summarizes the majority of Letterboxd for The Theory of Everything. Ganrob, 0.5 stars. Hey, dumb people, look at this. Smarty smarty man gets sicky sicky, and then his wifey is like, oh man, this is dumb, and then everyone gets a new partner, but it's okay, the kids aren't traumatized at all, promise. That was the only review that was worth it.
Get sicky sicky.
Oh, I think this does hit on a good point that they just never talk about anything he achieved in physics because it's too busy talking about how he loved his wife.
Pretty much, yeah. They have the one scene where he's at the university. And he's like, hey, actually, I think black holes are like this. And everyone's like, cool. Actually, yeah. And then now you're famous.
Yeah. We don't know how you make money, though.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about your career or anything.
Yeah.
All you need to know, you wrote a paper. You know the title. Later, you write a book. That's it. That's all you get.
Yeah, I would have been more interested in like actually seeing him research or think, like, I don't know, think about him more.
Yeah, or just like, I don't talk about what he did. You're not making a fun movie anyways. You can talk a little bit interesting astrophysics stuff in there. It's not like we're losing ground having a small marriage argument going on in the background. Do we need the scene of him arguing with his wife in the car? No, we don't need that scene because nothing happens in it. Academy details.
Yes.
This was nominated for 5 Academy Awards. Kyle, you already know it was nominated for Best Picture and Best Actor. Yep. What do you think else got an award nomination?
Felicity Jones?
Yeah.
Okay. Editing?
No.
Oh, okay. That's good, actually.
Yeah, I don't think you need to do that.
I gotta say adapted screenplay.
You'd be right.
Okay, yeah.
Last one you may not get was score.
Okay. Actually, yeah, that makes sense, but yeah.
I'm happy with that. It only won one award, as you noticed previously. It was for Best Actor, which, in my opinion, I'm kind of cool with that. Like, we'll see. We'll wait for the final, the review where we tell the Academy what's what. But right now, at face value, I'll take it.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair. And then, like, up to this point, we have seen a lot of other people that were like, why didn't this person get nominated for Best Actor?
Mm-hmm.
But this is the one they were going to beat. So, yeah.
Other notable awards, this cleaned up at the BAFTAs, which makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
It is British and a film. It won the BAFTA for Best Actor in a Leading Role, Best Adapted Screenplay, and Best British Film. Eat your heart out, Imitation Game.
Wow.
I got some interesting facts.
Okay.
Here. Not a lot of interesting facts, but I got a couple here.
Okay.
All right. In an email, that's the height of the drama right there. In an email to director James Marsh about the portrayal by Eddie Redmayne, Stephen Hawking said there were certain points when he thought he was watching himself.
Wow.
Well, you were. Did you pay attention to the movie? That's you, my guy. It's your name's in the title.
Oh my God.
Eddie Redmayne met with Stephen Hawking only once before filming. In the 3 hours I spent with him, he said maybe 8 sentences, recalls Redmayne. I just didn't feel like I could ask him intimate things. Therefore, he found other ways to prepare for the new role. He lost about 15 pounds and trained for 4 months with a dancer to learn how to control his body.
Mm.
He met with 40 MND patients, kept a chart tracking the order in which Hawking's muscles declined, and stood in front of a mirror for hours on end contorting his face. Lastly,
wow,
he remained motionless and hunched over between takes, so much so that an osteopath told him he had altered the alignment of his spine.
Oh my God.
A quote from Redmayne, I fear I'm a bit of a control freak. I was obsessive. I'm not sure it was healthy. No shit. No one's ever lightly changed their spine and was glad about it. It's only ever gets for the worse.
Is this why he looks like forever hunched over in the Harry Potter movies that he's in now?
It might be.
Oh, man.
Stephen Hawking said that the film was broadly true. He then went on to lend his voice for the final parts of the film. He lent it because Stephen Hawking voice that we all know is actually copyrighted.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's his voice. Screenwriter Anthony McCarten spent nearly 3 years convincing Jane Hawking to agree to a film adaptation of her book.
Hmm.
Should have given up. I don't know. Was it worth it? For him,
it was.
I mean,
he got nominated for Best Picture.
For him, it was. Jane Hawking requested that she and Stephen never make love on screen. This is because they had actors playing them. I wanted to put that in there.
I mean, I could maybe understand why.
Yeah.
Because it probably was a little awkward.
And I imagine you're... kids and grandkids are probably going to watch it.
True.
And that would be awkward. Yeah. Imagine watching, you know, the awkward thing of like watching a movie, the sex scene with your parents in it.
Yeah.
What if your parents were the sex scene? That would be weird, wouldn't it?
Oh, no.
Now I'm adding a section in for all biopics. The how real is it section?
Oh.
It's pretty good.
Okay.
It's pretty accurate.
All right.
Apparently, Hawking was a bit more of a dick. And he was actually diagnosed before he started dating Jane.
Hmm.
The coma was over-dramatized and their separation was actually sugar-coated a lot. But I think to get it made,
yeah,
they had to. Because otherwise, that would make it entertaining.
Yeah, and also I think they didn't want to maybe show him be a dick. Because
yeah, because you need to still sympathize with the protagonist, yeah, which like I think you could do with him still kind of being more true to life, but yeah, also like who cares if he's not
true
as mean in the movie as he's in real life. Like that's probably not the biggest deal breaker.
Isn't it justified if like you go through that devastating disease,
yeah,
to be a little bit of an asshole sometimes? Yeah.
I get probably. I think he kind of earned that one with like all the advancements he made to the scientific community oh, and to human advancement. I think you can take a couple dings for being a jerk after. I think you've earned that runway. But also, when they did split, it wasn't a quick conversation in the living room. It was like a pretty fiery explosion where they kind of like, you know, they really had it out. A lot of things were building for a while. And then Stephen Hawking kind of runs away with his attendant, who apparently was also a jerk and was kind of lying about Jane, trying to like break them up so that she could have Stephen, which worked. And one more thing that I remember now I didn't write down. Stephen Hawking's family hated Jane.
Where the fuck was this literal drama?
The actual in this drama. I know.
What the fuck?
And the scene where the mom confronts Jane asking whose kid it was.
Yeah.
That did happen.
Makes sense.
However, in real life, afterwards, she told Jane that she hates her and doesn't want her around. And that part got cut. That was a nicer version. Yeah.
See, this is another Foxcatcher situation where the real story has more drama than they were willing to show in the dramatized version of the events that actually happened. Why?
We actually have relationship drama worthy of the big screen and it's on the cutting room floor if it was even filmed. Unbelievable.
Right.
One last little bit to touch on.
All right.
This is my favorite part of studying the real story.
Okay.
I'll be quoting from a Slate article. The Hawkings had three children, as depicted in the movie. Robert was born in 1967, Lucy in 1970, and Timothy in 1979. In her memoir, Jane writes that Tim was larger than either Robert or Lucy at birth and describes panting for breath under the weight of the hefty infant. This fact is captured on film in The Theory of Everything. Timothy is played by an exceptionally large baby. I just really love the way that ends.
I did not know where you were going with that. I had no clue what the end point of that was going to be.
I really loved how that sentence wraps itself up, because if you think back, and I watched this on Wednesday night. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I kind of remember thinking, that's a big baby. And then reading that in the facts afterwards, that made me kind of happy. That brought some things around for me.
Well, at least they got a real baby.
Yeah.
Unlike another movie this season.
This is why it beat American Sniper for me, because they could actually get children to be in it.
Not only children, but large children.
Infants.
XXL infant.
I like to think of them casting the baby and it's pretty like, no, you're not big enough. Bring us a bigger baby.
Well,
Kyle, any final thoughts for you on The Theory of Everything?
Nah.
Yeah.
Brain's empty now.
That's fair. You know who doesn't have an empty brain? Baby with a big fucking head. Baby's got a lot of brain in there. Collapse into a black hole the size of that baby.
Oh my God.
Talk about a dwarf planet. That's just a dwarf human because it's a baby, but it's huge. That's all I got, though.
Okay, great. Oh, well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 2, episode 19 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this film or on this episode, so please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter, and Jason is at Windy_Mills. Of course, all of those links are going to be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
So you live alone?
Yes.
You think I'm pretty?
I like you, gorgeous.
You don't want to wake up, do you?
That's right. Next episode, we're talking about Under the Skin. So make sure to watch it before next episode. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.